As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg.
The data so far does show an improvement in the last couple of weeks, and that improvement's important.
You've also got almost a gloom cover trade. I know Lisa's familiar with that, where there's been so much gloom out there, you wonder about the elasticity as people catch up. Who they catch up to is Neil Dutta, without question, one of the most optimistic, persistent believers in the American economic experiment. Neil Dutta with Renaissance Macro is with us. Neil, just simply, do we underestimate the resilience and recovery ability of the American economy?
Well, that's what the consensus has been doing fairly consistently since the second week of April, Tom. And I think they're still doing it. I mean, if you look at your own Bloomberg News consensus of economists, the growth estimate for 2021 is around 5%. I think more folks are thinking that we're going to have a good year, and that's welcome. But I don't think enough have appropriately sort of priced in the right tail scenario. We're going to have a good year.
The persistency.
I think we're going to have a great year.
Right.
And I think that's what's important. Well, that's what the markets need to kind of get their collective heads around.
The persistency of 5%, and there's a great assumption that we noodle down to a potential GDP of 2%, even under 2%. I get the sense, Neil, you disagree with that. What is your run rate of a post-pandemic American economy?
I mean, I think it's higher than two. I mean, you know, we had a lot of, productivity was starting to pick up. I mean, I think in many respects, I mean, the structural growth outlook for the U.S. is in some way cyclical. I mean, this idea of running an economy hot, utilizing as many resources as possible, making employers, essentially forcing employers via a tight labor market to kind of seek out additional efficiencies through their existing workforce. That was, I think, showing some promise pre-pandemic, and I think the Fed's going to try it again, Tom. And that's why, even in the face of stronger data, the Fed is unlikely to budge on their policy guidance. And I think that's obviously a bullish backdrop for equity markets, but I think more importantly, it's a bullish backdrop for the broader U.S. economy. Things like R&D spending are picking up.
Yeah.
Are you really going to be worried about secular stagnation in the U.S.? At a time when our banking system is much better capitalized,
right. You
mentioned the outperformance in the banks. We're doing a lot of fiscal policy. And, I mean, the ingenuity is obvious. Did anyone think we were going to get a vaccine within a year? We did it. So I think that speaks to a lot of, the underlying growth dynamics and what's possible in the U.S.
Neil, you have been right.
You've
been absolutely right about this with your bullish call at the U.S. economy. And the gloom crew has been wrong. Yes, Tom. And I often find myself empathizing with them, not because I want to feel gloomy, but because a lot of people, including myself, want to see around corners.
Okay.
And the question is, what corner are we going to be looking at? Neil, what you're looking at right now is the potential for perhaps not overheating, but running hot. At what point does that force the market's hand? Perhaps the Fed doesn't move, but the market moves ahead of the Fed. At what point does it become too hot for equities to keep rallying, given where rates are right now versus where they could be?
I mean, real rates are -1%, Lisa. Give me a call when they're at zero. We can talk maybe then. I mean, it seems... I still think the idea of interest rates breaking the back of the equity market is still a long ways away. And remember, I mean, the biggest risk to the U.S. fixed income market really is when Europe, frankly, is able to sort of reestablish its its status, its growth status. And that hasn't happened, I mean, for a while. So I think the risk to U.S. Treasury really builds when you have, broad-based participation in the global economy and, and when Europe kind of reestablishes its AAA status. And I don't think that that's really happened yet.
I think Neil needs to come on weekly just to provide Lisa some therapy and provide the bears out there. Just don't you think, Tom?
Therapy? Does this count as therapy?
Just some bear therapy.
I think we're just edge of fair and balanced.
Neil, does he want to play in gloom therapy?
Come on every week. I'm sure he does that with his clients on a daily basis.
Does
anyway,
he?
Neil, just quickly, on the economy, you mentioned just a couple of times that you don't think the market is quite picking up on this yet, or at least the economics community is not. When you sit around the table with a team at Renaissance Macro at the moment, where do you think the missed opportunity is as you see this economy snapping back, gearing up in the way that you expect?
Where do I think the opportunity is? Well, I think things that are tied to the reopening trade still have room to go. I mean, if you look at things like airlines, if you look at hotels. But again, I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, you mentioned what are the two sectors that have been doing well since Election Day? Banks? Energy. Who would have thought that with the sort of unified
right.
Democratic government?
Yep.
It's one of these things
so
where you have these sort of sell side equity baskets, and they're just an entire waste of time. I mean, I have
Uh-oh.
The defense sector in my Don't Republican basket, and I have the banks in my Democrat, and I have the Republicans in my banks in the Republican
yeah.
basket. Obviously, it doesn't work because fundamental growth dynamics matter more. And what that's telling you basically is that growth is picking up. If you have stronger growth, you're going to need more energy. Hence, oil prices go up. And the Fed is, like a carpenter, hammering the front end of the yield curve, right? And at the same time, the growth dynamics are kind of pushing up the long end. That steepens the yield curve. That's good for banks. So, I think let's focus on the growth dynamics. Let's
mm-hmm.
sort of keep a turn away from some of these sort of political arguments. And I think that'll lead you to much better investment outcomes.
Certainly over the last couple of months. Neil, great to catch up, sir, as always. Neil Dutta there of Renaissance Macro.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
As you know, we've talked to a lot of fancy people in vaccines, people making vaccines, people at the cutting edge of scientific research. We also take great pride at Bloomberg Surveillance that we're talking to people operationally in the trenches. One of those is Tammy Lundstrom with Trinity Health of Michigan, with some 90 hospitals nationwide, and the operational reality of doing the vaccine. We're thrilled that Dr. Lundstrom could join us this morning. Tammy, I want to start with the pure medicine. Do you have a confidence that we can correctly execute right now a two-dose strategy?
I am definitely confident that we can do that. And within Trinity Health, we've been doing that. We've ramped up, and we're delivering over 90% of shots in arms every 7 days compared to the vaccine that we get delivered to us. So we have ramped
right.
up and we're ready to go.
I can't emphasize enough, folks, this is the cutting edge of what we're all talking about. Dr. Lundstrom, with that said, when do we see the migration down to younger and younger people?
Probably somewhere around the late April to May timeframe. It's very heartening that J&J is ready to submit their FDA EUA approval. We're very excited to have more in our armamentarium than the two vaccines that we have, and we're anxious to get more supplies so we can get people protected.
Dr. Lundstrom, the U.S. is doing a lot better than a lot of nations. Canada and the European continent come to mind in the forefront. Are they going quickly enough to get ahead of the new strain of COVID that has emerged in the United Kingdom, that has emerged in South Africa?
Well, I think we can always go faster. And I think we're all committed to trying to get shots in arms as quickly as possible. We can't forget, though, that we still have to mask. We still have to physical distance. We still have to wash our hands, avoid crowds. So it's really a bundle of activities that we really have to double down on while we're trying to get shots in arms quickly.
Talking about getting shots in arms, a lot of people are talking anecdotally about how the vaccine has to be defrosted. And then if all the people don't show up to their scheduled appointments who are eligible currently, they discard the remaining vaccine. How much are you seeing that, and what can we do to avoid some of this waste?
Well, we are actually not doing that. We're creating waiting lists. So that we have people and places that we can get the vaccine to quickly, within a few minutes after knowing that we have excess doses. And we're also looking at using those excess doses to vaccinate inpatients in the hospital as they're discharged so that we don't waste a single dose.
How much discretion do you have around making those decisions, Doctor?
It's very difficult right now because it's a state-by-state decision of what the prioritization lists are. So we're following state-by-state, and our waiting lists keep in mind of who's on the priority list per state. And we are following those guidelines. So we are keeping our waiting lists ready to go. And as states open up to more populations, we expand the list.
Would you find it helpful to get that flexibility, to have that extra discretion yourself?
I think that we've been able to manage through the difficulties of various state regulations and requirements of who's going first, and then keep our lists accordingly. We care for about 1 to 1.5% of all patients in the U.S., so we've got a lot of patients eager to get the vaccine. So that is a very good news, but also heartbreaking because we can't get supply fast enough.
Well, that's the point I wanted to bring up, Tammy. If we have Washington legislation, and with the scale of Trinity, folks, 90 plus hospitals, multi-billion dollar revenue stream with all those expenses as well, you get a check for, say, $10 million from Washington. What's your greatest need at Trinity right now with money from the government?
I would say our greatest need right now is the vaccine supply. And then followed by staffing. We know that staffing is very precious, difficult. Colleagues are tired. So really getting some supplemental staffing to help us not only balance the 1,200 or more patients with COVID-19 that we have in our hospitals today, people that are coming to us for emergency care and heart attacks and strokes, but also getting the vaccine clinics up and running and partnering with public health in our communities to really try to get a collective mass vaccination sites and move to getting shots in arms as quickly as possible.
Doctor, thank you. And thank you so much on behalf of us all for the hard work you're doing at the moment. We appreciate it. Please come back soon. Dr. Tammy Lundstrom there of Trinity Health.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority, by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Right now, full disclosure, folks, long ago and far away, there was a set of repeated grandfathers that were called Henry Clay Keene. And if you go to Henry Clay High School in Lexington, Kentucky, you have an interior knowledge of the Whigs, their success, and their failure in the 19th century. Andy Barr joins us now. He is a member of the GOP, which is what you are in Kentucky, and joins us from the 6th Congressional District and from the capital of this nation. Andy, you're more qualified than Mitch McConnell to talk about this trap of your GOP going the way of the Whigs. What do the Republicans do to not repeat Henry Clay's history?
Well, that's a great question, and obviously there is some soul searching. Anytime you lose a presidential election, a party should do that. We're doing that, and I think we've come to a good place as of last night with our meeting to make sure people understand the Republican Party is a big tent, diverse party. We have a small number of colleagues who voted to impeach the president, a large number of members who voted against impeaching the president. But we recognize that we need to attract a lot of people to the Republican Party because we're the party of free enterprise and limited government. And as, as you see from this president, it's a very different story.
We have a president preaching bipartisanship. Is your party too frugal? Are the Republicans too austere for 2022?
No, not at all. In fact, some would argue we're not fiscally responsible enough given the $4 trillion that we borrowed last year in response to the pandemic. But the truth of the matter is we have over $1 trillion in unspent stimulus funds left, and we're rushing to borrow another $2 trillion. That's why you're not seeing a lot of bipartisanship. Unfortunately, the president is not working with Republicans. They're using a budget procedure to ram through this $2 trillion in deficit spending.
Oh, come on. You guys used the same procedure. Stop it.
Well, we did.
You did the same procedure last time around.
We certainly did, and there's nothing inherently wrong with using the procedure, but if you want to be bipartisan about it, you don't use that procedure, frankly. And this president has said that he wants to be bipartisan, but when he had the opportunity to do it, he's obviously turned away from that.
Congressman, we've got to get through a lot of topics, not just stimulus, but also on regulation. I understand you're on the House Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations as well. Given the events in the last couple of weeks in financial markets, leading the administration is Secretary Yellen. Do you think she needs to recuse herself from this?
Well, I don't know if she needs to recuse herself, but what I want to see from Secretary Yellen is a little bit of caution and deliberation and not a lot of overreaction to this. The broader markets are doing just fine. Obviously, there was volatility with respect to Reddit-fueled trades on GameStop and other AMC and other equities. But that's actually as a result of the advent of zero-cost trading and the democratization of access to the capital markets. That's not a bad thing. And I think what you're seeing is the markets actually functioning fairly well with market discipline setting in, both with the hedge funds who are learning a lot about zero-cost trading and the influx of day trading and what that means for their short positions. It means that short squeezes are very possible, and I think there's market discipline that will set in with these hedge funds and professional Wall Street professionals. On the other hand, I think a lot of the day traders and the small investors are learning about capitalism, learning that fundamentals matter, learning that earnings and valuation matter, and that on the downside of this rally, as investors get in too late in the rally, and as they get too far away from valuation, there is a big risk associated with that, too. So the market is actually working. Of course, it's appropriate for the SEC and Congress to look at whether or not any laws have been violated from a market manipulation standpoint. But to me, at this point, doesn't look like any illegal activity and certainly doesn't look like any systemic risk.
Congressman, there is a larger debate, though, about anonymity on social media and the ability of unknown actors to act manipulatively, to act without oversight from regulators, potentially from within or from without, from outside of the country. How much is the direction of questioning going to go toward that issue?
I think there will be some questions about social media. There's questions about social media all the way around, both in terms of financial marketplaces, but also in the marketplace of ideas. And that's always appropriate for us to look at social media, the role of social media. But I think the more information generally, the better. People need to understand the sources of that information. But at the end of the day, I believe that democratization of access to capital, the advent of low-cost, no-cost trading platforms, and more information is a good thing. It's not illegal to share stock tips or ideas about the equity markets.
Congressman Barr, very quickly here, not enough time. I don't care about that. What I care about, are we going to endure with another running of the Kentucky Derby May 1st?
Yes, we will. In fact, I've talked to Churchill Downs. They're never going to do what they did last year and shut down the Derby on the first Saturday of May. And that's a good thing. As co-chairman of the Congressional Horse Caucus, we want the Derby to be back on the first Saturday of May.
There we go.
We hope it will be with spectators.
We'll see if we'll get the spectators.
You know, as a foreigner,
there.
I'm not sure if that caucus even exists
the
or
Congressional
not.
Congressional Horse Committee? Is
Andy,
that
does
real?
That exist? Is that a thing?
No, look, you know, there's a lot of betting that goes on in Kentucky.
Oh, really?
There's some speculative trading that we've seen. But you know what I love? I love that, you know, a lot of the millennials are participating in the stock market now. And some people have said that millennials are more open to socialism. It looks like from this GameStop story that many millennials are more interested in capitalism. That is a good thing.
I just want to find out who's running the book down on Capitol Hill for the Republicans. Great to catch up, Andy. Let's continue this dialogue. Andy Barr there, Republican from Kentucky. Congressman, thank you.
Dana Peterson with us now with the Conference Board. Of course, her tour of duty with Citigroup for a good length of time. One of the most interesting pedigrees in American economics of Wesleyan and then the combine at University of Wisconsin at Madison as well. Dana, have you rejiggered your Excel spreadsheets? That's what you do at the Conference Board. Are you moving the numbers around now, or is it steady as it goes?
Well, we are looking at potential upgrades to our forecast for the second quarter, given the fact that there is still a very high likelihood that there will be some fiscal supports coming through. It's not clear how big it'll be. Certainly, the current administration is thinking about more targeted stimulus checks. And also, you have the Republican Party coming out with a program that's, you know, roughly $900 billion rather than 1.9. But we're still looking to see that there could be potentially be some strength in the second quarter of this year.
Dana, what is it about the nature of this shock that means the economy is changing direction so quickly at any given time? The recovery is really, really fast when we just start to pare things back a little bit. What's your read on that?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the progression of the virus and how many cases there are, and certainly how governments react to that and how consumers react to that. But we're very constructive on the fact that we do have this vaccine rollout. Certainly, you know, there have been some estimates in terms of when there could be a widespread availability of vaccines and herd immunity that could potentially mean that we start seeing a pickup in activity late spring. Over the summer, people get out there, travel, go to the beaches, spend money, and consequently, we have a very strong second half of the year. But again, it really depends upon the evolution of the virus, whether or not there are new strains that come online that cause renewed disruptions in economic activity.
Dana, based on the data that we've been getting and the speed of the recovery, do you think that there's going to be less economic scarring than people had expected, say, 3 months ago?
Well, I mean, certainly in January, some of the data are better than expected. Most people were looking for potentially even a negative GDP print in the first quarter. Maybe we won't get that. Our own view is maybe we'll see 2% growth. But certainly there is still a lot of scope for scarring in the labor market. We still have roughly 9 million people who are not working. Many people have left the labor market, especially older workers and women. And certainly the older workers who retire, they're not coming back. But certainly with women, we, you know, we're very concerned that they will have difficulty coming back into the labor market. And certainly there are going to be certain industries that are never going to be the same, certainly because of the virus. And so that means jobs are attached to that. So there still could be scarring in the labor market, even if GDP growth looks better than expected.
Dana, do you expect that we can apply stimulus to the people that really need the stimulus?
Well, I don't work in the government, so hopefully there are mechanisms to make sure that, you know, certainly people who have experienced unemployment and also losses in income will get those stimulus checks, and that people who are potentially upper income or in that, you know, kind of K-shaped recovery, the upper part of the K-shaped recovery that have not experienced any interruptions and are actually doing well don't necessarily need it, but that we make sure that we get it to the people who really do need it. How that's going to work, I don't know, but let's hope that that can be achieved.
Well, just to build on what Tom was talking about, there's a composition of the stimulus. It's very much at the heart of a heated debate, the idea of the efficiency of a $1,400 check to Americans making below a certain income versus funding to state and local government or the necessity for both. What is the most efficient use of funding? What is the greatest need right now, Dana?
Well, I think, you know, the needs are pretty myriad. Certainly you have individuals who are in trouble because they've had bouts of unemployment and or they've lost income. You also have state and local governments who have shouldered, you know, part of the burden of this in terms of testing, caring for people through the healthcare system,
Also, loss of revenues as people have been unemployed, and also as some people have been moving out of city regions. So it seems like there's a lot of trouble all around. And, you know, it's not really up to me to determine like where the money goes, but certainly as an economist, wherever there's pain, there is potential for dollars to go and to help these economies, either household balance sheets or the coffers of state and local governments.
Dana, great to catch up. Good to see you, as always. Dana Peterson there of the Conference Board. Thank you.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
We take a snapshot right now into primaries and then on to a November election for the mayor of the city of New York. Bill Pepitone not only has a magical name within all of the heritage of this great city, that would be baseball, but far more his public service in law enforcement in New York. And he joins us this morning for comments here and also worldwide on the state of our politics in law enforcement. Bill Pepitone, you would be a change agent and mayor. What would be your first task?
First task is to bring back public safety to the streets of New York City. Without public safety, we have nothing. We have no business. We have no economy. We have no tourism. We have unsafe schools. We have a New York City like we have right now, completely in chaos with no direction. Public safety is the building block for everything New York City. And that's step number one.
How do you take your public safety message across the cultures and the politics of the boroughs of this city?
Through conversation, through face-to-face meetings with community leaders, legitimate community leaders who want what's best for their constituents and their community members, getting the police and the community together in a room and not leaving that room until there are real solutions. It's not about painting city streets or fancy slogans. It's about real dialogue, real discussion, and real answers.
So you're one of only two Republicans running for the New York City mayoral office. How much do you think that this helps you or hurts you, given the antipathy to the former president in the region?
Well, before the primaries roll around, I'm pretty sure we're going to see a few more candidates jump in. I don't know if it helps or hurts me. My message stays the same. It's about New Yorkers. It's about public safety. It's about rebuilding our economy. As far as the president and the way Republicans are viewed in New York City, that's up to me to get my message out. And my message is far different than most that are running on the Democratic side, who just want to continue the same policy. So it's really about, it's up to me. I have to get my message out and make it clear to everyone.
What's the message that you have in terms of how to regain some financial stability to the region, given the incredible hit and the incredible deficit?
First and foremost, we have to open up our businesses. Our small businesses have been decimated by the policies of the governor and the mayor. We have to open it up. We have to do it safely. There is a path to doing it safely. We have to open up our venues. We have to open up Broadway, our sporting events. We have to get the heartbeat of the city rolling, and we have to get the MTA back on track. We have to invest in our infrastructure. The more people we get coming into the city, the more the city will rebound quicker.
Bill Pepitone, I'm fascinated how a Republican message rebuilds across the boroughs of this great city. Obviously, there's a comfort. I'm going to pick on Staten Island, and you know better than me, the map of the city. At the margin, how do you fight the battle to get a larger Republican vote? What do you need from elite Republicans to make that story work?
We need support from elite Republicans. We need support from the Republican Party here in New York. They need to step up. They need to stand behind their candidates. They have to make a clear and smart decision on who that candidate's going to be, that that person has the right message. My campaign has the right message. I know I'm the right person for New York City right now. So the party really needs to get behind me, to get, as I said, get behind my message and make it clear to New York that this is the path we need to travel to bring everything back.
We have messaging of Republicans around this nation greatly divided, as we just heard from a gentleman from the 6th District of Kentucky, between what I'm going to call a collegially Trumpism and less Trumpism. How do you fold the last 4 years of the national Republican experiment into how you campaign in New York City?
Well, I think you have to look at some of the policies that the president put in place that were successful. and you show the people how those policies worked here in New York City and helped people here in New York City and how they can continue to help people in New York City. You have to get past a lot of the lies and the misinformation that was put out by certain media outlets. And again, that comes down to face-to-face conversation with people.
All right. So aside from, wait, are you blaming media outlets? You're saying that basically, build on that. What are you saying with respect to that?
Well, I think a lot of media outlets have put out misinformation throughout the president's four-year term, designed to divide. And I think that's trickled down to our governor and our mayor as well.
Okay.
Their policies were meant to divide, and that's why we're in the situation we're in.
Do you think that the Republican support of cities like New York has been sufficient to help the region get out of the hole that it's currently in?
No, we need more support. We need more support from both parties, but especially the Republican Party, to get the message out, to show everyone this is the pathway to rebuild our city. They really need to be stronger, more forceful, and more boisterous.
You pull one final question, Bill Pepitone. You pull off the upset of the decade. How do you work with Governor Cuomo?
Well, I sit down with the governor. We start with a clean slate. I'm going to be a very different mayor than Bill de Blasio. I'm going to stand up for city residents. And again, we're going to have a clean slate, work on the issues, and I'm going to make my point to the governor that without New York City, there is no New York State. So if the governor has any further political aspirations, he has to help me rebuild the city.
Bill Pepitone, thank you so much. Running as a Republican for the mayor race, and of course, many, many candidates there heating up, for those of you nationwide not following the race. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm on Twitter at Tom Keene. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.